Welcome to the Pixels and Dice podcast, where every week our crew of intrepid dipshits blather on about all manner of gaming topics, as if they actually have something useful to say. Really, it is just the worst when it comes to podcasts, but here's an idea. Turn it into a drinking game. Every time they say something stupid, take a drink. But seriously, don't do that. Your liver will thank you.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Scormus.
And I'm Billis.
And today, a little different. Well, no, not so much if you've been listening for a while, but this is a pre-recorded broadcast because the weekend we should have been recording this, I was recovering from camping. My sweetie and I went camping over the 4th of July weekend, or holiday, got back on the weekend, and I just wasn't up to podcasting. So instead, we've got this for you.
Yes. Today, we're going to be deconstructing one of my favorite tabletop games.
One of mine too, actually.
Well, basically, it's part of this umbrella system called World of Darkness. I mean, if you like a good gaming system, World of Darkness, I can't say enough good things about it. It's just an amazing system. But if you're more into like the theater and, you know, LARPing and goth kind of lifestyle, I guess you'd say, you'd probably steer more towards the Vampire, the Masquerade game.
Yeah.
If you're one of those power gamer, bro dudes or whatever you want to call them, they're probably going to swing towards this game. And I don't really consider myself either one of those, but I do prefer the Werewolf the Apocalypse game.
Yeah.
In it, of course, you get to play a werewolf, which sounds like, you know, awesome and amazing, and it is, but you're playing a dying breed. The werewolves are on the way out, and they know it, and they're just doing what they can to hang on.
Fade as Gaia fade.
Right. As the world is dying, they're dying too. And they're trying to stop that by, you know, protecting the planet as best they can.
While being hunted by vampires and so forth.
Vampires and Fomori and all kinds of other horrors. But they're still really fucking badass.
Yep.
I remember, I don't know if it was you or if it was Sean who was running the game. And he had this big bad vampire set up to take us out, and I just did this running pass, and I just snagged him by the jaw with the claws and ripped his head off.
Oh no, that was Sean.
He was not happy that I killed his big baddie in one hit.
Well, that was.
But that's
thing.
That's what werewolves are capable of. They are just these siege engines of destruction. Especially when they're in the full Garou form.
Krenos.
The Krenos form, yes. Because you have five different forms, if I remember right. There's the full wolf form. There's the half-wolf form. There's the human form. There's the half-human form. And then there's the full-on Krenos form, which is, you know, the...
I think the Howling. You've seen the movie The Howling.
The Howling, yes. Howling.
That's
is
a Krenos
example. Whereas, like, American Werewolf in London, or not American Werewolf, that's what's one I'm thinking of. The original werewolf movie.
The Wolfman.
That was the half-human.
Yeah.
I can't even remember the different
forms.
No,
I don't remember
now.
I don't have my book with me.
But regardless, it's got a lot of really cool things to it. You get to choose, of course, you know, where your werewolf comes from. You know, you get to choose what tribe you get into determines how your game plays. Because, I mean, like, the Geta Fenris are they're hardcore. Yeah. Whereas, like, the Children of Gaia are a lot more, you know, accepting. You know, they're calm, they're cool, they're chill.
They're victims.
Yeah. Some of the most badass groups I worked with were mostly Children of Gaia.
Yeah, but they were they weren't Geta Fenris.
Well, and the other group I like to play with were the Bone Gnars, which are mostly homeless people. And people don't think a whole lot about them because, you know, they're just trash that people just ignore. But if you want information, you go to the Bone Gnars because they are there always. They're always watching.
Well, I think I think we need to kind of step back a moment because regarding the World of Darkness, you really can't grasp what these games are until you realize, you know, the interchangeability is one thing, but they're extremely social games. I mean, yes, of course, tabletop role-playing games are social games, but
this takes it up a few notches.
It's all about character and delving into the character, and they're monsters, but it's a more personal horror. Usually when you're a werewolf, you come into your own as a teenager when your hormones are kicking in and you're all confused about your personality, not knowing exactly who you are, where you fit in the world. You know, you're just building your sexuality, and then you find out you're this monster, and you have these and burst into a creature that has uncontrollable bloodlust. And you'll wake up and you're covered in blood with dead things around you. And you don't know how you got there. And it's just until you're grabbed by your tribe and brought in and taught, which some people, they're raised in that and they're eventually eased into it. And it's fine. They're okay. But for others, not so much. It can be very traumatic. And
you're also being the ones who, you know, come into their werewolf ability are also being hunted by the Black Spiral because they want to turn them into Black Spirals.
The Black Spiral Dancers.
They're the evil, if you want to put it that way. They're the one of the enemies of the werewolves.
They were a tribe
of werewolves. They were the White Walkers, weren't they?
They were the White Walker, not to be confused with the, you know, Game of Thrones White Walkers.
This came well before that.
They were like white furred werewolves, and they were a perfectly legitimate tribe until they were corrupted. And
no, they weren't exactly corrupted. What it is they sacrificed themselves to stop this one massive horror. I can't remember what it was, but it was this giant worm thing. They sacrificed themselves to it, and in doing so, they were corrupted and became the Black Spiral Dancers.
Excuse me, listeners, isn't that what I said? They were corrupted?
But it's how they became corrupted.
I don't care!
They might.
Let's just see. Werewolf, the apocalypse. Black Spiral Dancers are pretty much the agents of the apocalypse.
Yes.
They're not the only ones, but when it comes to werewolf, they are among the Fomori, other big bad nasties. They're a major player in what's trying to destroy the world and bring about a new dawn and whatever, right? Each of the games has their own individual encased storyline, for lack of a better term. Like vampire, I'll go into it further at another time. They fight amongst themselves, the vampire clans, but they also have to deal with problems with werewolves and problems with mages and such and so forth. But it's mostly an internal struggle amongst the Camarilla and the Sabbat. With werewolf, it's more of an isolationist fear. The werewolves used to control the wilds and for thousands of years were in tune with nature. And now as cities grow up, as, you know, the rural is smaller and smaller and smaller, and there's less land to go and run and hunt, they're being slowly encircled and crushed and decimated. Little by little.
Some of them have actually learned to adapt, and that's where the Glasswalkers come from.
And
the Glasswalkers are the ones who basically became CEOs and business magnates. They're, you know, all suit and ties, and their greatest weapon is lawyers.
Yeah. And they're also the least treated, they're the least trusted of all the tribes.
Pretty much, yeah.
As they turned from Gaia. They didn't really. They just worship in a different way.
Exactly.
You have your shamanistic totems and whatnot. I have my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I like glasswalkers. They're kind of cool. Because they get along with vampires so well.
To a point.
To a point, of course. But, you know, the Anarchs and, oh God, I can't remember that other clan. We'll get into it another time. There's some that really do fit in well with werewolves. They can actually get along with them.
Mm-hmm.
The, you mentioned the Bone Gnawers actually can intermingle with and communicate with the Nosferatu, the underground, mostly insane, sewer-hiding vampires. Because they're basically the same from their society. They're outcast. The same level of outcast. Yes. But anyway, please continue.
The combat system is, you know, everything's D10. And for D&D players, that may seem a little hard to wrap your brain around, but it's actually really freaking easy. The only thing you need to know is you need a lot. And I mean a flippin' lot of D10s.
Just go to your local game store or go to Amazon and buy a set of 10 D10.
And even then, you may need more.
Sure, buy a few sets. I'm perfectly cool with that.
I remember rolling 20 plus D10s for something. I don't remember what it was, but I had to borrow D10s from my neighbors.
As a general rule, you'll never need more than 10. But that's a general rule.
This was something spectacular that had been going on. So, yeah, it was awesome. But I don't really think we need to get into all the different tribes, but there are a lot of them in there. If you're into, like, martial arts or, you know, like, monk-type characters, they got you covered. If you're into berserkers, they got you covered. If you like, you know, sneaky thief types, again, you're covered. They've got all kinds of different stereotypes built into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you don't have to play that particular stereotype. If you want to be a Geta Fenris and not be this wild-maned berserker, by all means, do it.
Yeah.
They've got all kinds of ways to help you flesh your characters out. But, if you want a game that is a lot of fun, leads to a whole big world of gaming. Because if you get started with this and one of your players says, well, I'd like to play a mage, well, then that leads you to a completely separate game, but you can intermix them. It just becomes very difficult.
And that's
when you've got like a group of they've got vampires and werewolves and mages all working together. It gets to be a little hectic for the game master, but yes, it can happen.
My problem with the cross game thing is werewolf is designed for itself. The monsters and whatnot are tuned, and the player classes and whatnot are all tuned against each other at a certain power level.
Mm-hmm.
Vampire is tuned against itself. And one thing we were able to compare is they've got basic stats in Vampire for an NPC werewolf. Vampire came out a couple of years before werewolf.
Right.
And then when werewolf came out, you could look at a player character of werewolf and the NPC stats for werewolf in Vampire and go, my player character werewolf would rip this other NPC werewolf's head off. Because
there's a huge power difference.
Like you had mentioned about the werewolf tearing the vampire's head off. The thing is that was, in my opinion, played wrong by the game map. Because a vampire isn't going to just stand still and let a werewolf get close enough to hit it. They're going to strike from distance. They're going to strike from the shadows. They're not going to be a Bond villain and just stand there in a moat and let a werewolf charge forward at super speed, because they would, even if they did and got caught out in the open, they'd use their own super speed or turn to mist or some other ability. They'd just leap into the rafters. They would get away. They wouldn't just stand there and get their head torn off. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm. It was still a cool moment,
though. It was a very cool moment. It really was. But the games aren't very well tuned against each other. For example, people look at Wraith and go, ugh, gotta play a ghost? Man, that I could blow most of my energy just trying to knock a cup over. Because if you can actually affect things, then you're an insane ghost. Somebody was watching way too much, like,
Ghost?
Yeah. Was watching way too... I knew there was a movie that I couldn't remember the name. If you're a poltergeist, you're nuts. And yeah, you can affect things, but you can basically just knock stuff around and make noises. You can't really harm a living creature. But that's not how they should be played. If a Wraith actually is smart and thinks about their abilities, they're exceedingly lethal if they're played properly. It's got to think it out. I don't need to knock that thing over or shoot that gun or whatever to affect a living creature. They just have to appear in front of a vehicle driving down the road and terrify the driver so that he swerves and crashes into your NPC, into your werewolf, or something along those lines. Maybe causes a spark and the car explodes then. Little things.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it would be very taxing upon them, but it can be done. And don't even get me into Changeling. I'd say Changeling is one of the least powerful of the various classic World of Darkness games.
Yeah, but if compared you're into fairies, others, you know.
Fairies are badass. Not against a vampire, but they're badass. Whatever. Point is, trying to do the whole mixed campaign thing
doesn't work.
Oh, it can be difficult.
But one thing we should bring up is every single one of these games, they have one core theme. They're all trying very hard not to let the normal people know they exist. These are cardinal rules. You do not display what you are to the normals. That's why vampires are doing the masquerade.
Amarilla has their rules.
This rule set, because they don't want... Because if the humans know that vampires are real and vampires exist, they're going to start hunting them.
There's a reason the Jimisi are almost destroyed.
You know, and werewolves, same thing. Werewolves might be badass siege engines of destruction, but you get enough people with silver bullets and the werewolves are going to go even faster than they already are. So they all keep it on the down low. You don't want anybody to know. And there is a natural occurring effect that helps cover, you know, slips. You know, if somebody sees a werewolf running across the street from a distance and they're filming it with their phone, they're going to get this blurry kind of out of focus, dark, furry figure that you can't really specify what it is. And people are going to go, oh, that's a Bigfoot sighting.
Or it's a man in a fur coat.
Right. Or
whatever. Technology naturally rejects that which is of Gaia.
Well, and people's realities are distorted in the presence of supernatural creatures. Their brain goes, oh, that couldn't have been a werewolf. That had to have been just a really big dog.
Yeah. Or, you know, those guys fighting in the middle of the street. Well, that must have been, you know, gang members or bank robbers, something their mind can grasp. Normies don't grasp the supernatural very well.
And if there's certain situations where the normal can't deny what they saw, if there's just absolutely no other explanation for it, it tends to break them mentally.
They become hunters.
Well, not always. Remember the asylum one I was running?
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember which player it was. He decided he needed something off of one of the shelves, and he went into... The werewolves have the ability to step into this ethereal plane called the Umbra, where you can still see the real world, but you're kind of in a limbo dimension that's right next to it.
It's a spirit world.
He was in his spirit world. He was in the spirit world, and he reached into the real world to grab something off of a shelf just as a janitor was opening up the closet, and he saw this, you know, this big clawed hand reach out of nowhere and grab this thing off the shelf. And he had a heart attack and died on the spot because, you know, he was in his 70s and it took its toll on his poor little body, and he just keeled over and died.
It's a perfectly reasonable response.
So yeah, it's geared to help protect the players from, you know, their little slips, because they're gonna slip. And the one on the cruise ship worked out really well, because the ship was people abandoned ship because there was a bomb on board, and we had to try and, you know, stop the bomb because we didn't want to get blown up either. So it's just, you know, you've got all these werewolves running around a cruise ship that has been abandoned. So we had carte blanche to just shapeshift all the hell we wanted. I think the best part of that was when Kristen, I think her name was.
Yes.
She grabbed the bomb and chucked it overboard. And Lupo the Magnificent dove off the cruise ship, grabbed the bomb, and brought it back.
He fetched.
Because Lupo was a little bit crazy. Hutched. He was more dog than werewolf.
Yes.
And that fetch mechanic was ingrained in his ass.
Yeah, that was funny.
It was also Kristen's character who lost her freaking mind when we had to abandon the ship because it was going to explode. Thank you, Lupo. So I think it was your player grabbed her Book of Shadows.
Yes.
She was a mage who had her spell book on a computer,
it was a technomancer.
Laptop. Yeah. And he just grabbed it and hucked it off the boat.
Go get
her ass off the boat, because she was not leaving.
She refused to leave.
So he just threw it into the water and she dove after it.
Oh, no, I technically threw it into the air.
It was aiming for the water.
Yeah, well, that was her problem.
But it did get her off the ship.
Jump out there, grab it, teleport away. I don't know what mages do.
Yeah, didn't really care.
Yeah. We didn't play with her anymore. At least I didn't.
I don't think I did either, but it wasn't because of her ability to play. It was just, you know, other things. But regardless, that's pretty much my summarization of Werewolf. It's a really cool game, and they've got tons of expansions that you can buy. Like, I got the Werewolf Wild West, which is, they're not in as nearly as a dire state as they are in the modern version. I just couldn't get the whole Wild West feel.
It's weird.
In the game. Really hard to do. But I mean, it gives you a ton of options, you know?
All their alternate setting stuff is like Vampire of the Dark Age. That at least is a little more easy to grasp, but it's still playing in the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
Vampires they already control everything. In the modern day, they have an ironclad grasp on everything in the Dark Age. So where's the challenge? Oh, wait, fighting against each other, of course. But that's for another time.
Can I do one quick aside?
Sure, of course.
Well, speaking of vampires, I just read earlier this week that Jim Butcher's Peace Talks, the next book from the Dresden Files, he's finishing up the finale of it, so it should be coming out soon.
Right on.
I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to that for a long time.
Yeah, I want the audiobook. I listen to them on my way to and from work.
I know. I'm just saying. I'm looking forward to it. I'm very happy.
We also had a second aside. You wanted to talk about something about Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, we've been playing D&D for a long damn time. And when we started playing, that's when they were doing that whole, you know, satanic panic and bullshit. And now that there's been this resurgence of popularity with D&D, with Critical Role and all these people streaming D&D games and podcasting D&D games.
Knights of the Tabletop.
They're actually selling the latest box set, the Essentials. It's a trimmed down version of the core rules. You get some magic item cards. You get a whole bunch of other stuff just to get you started.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling it in Target.
Wow.
If that doesn't say mainstream has accepted you, I don't know what does.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely mainstream. The only thing more mainstream would be having it in Walmart, but Target will do. Target, as they say.
Well, and that's just it. It's an exclusive for Target.
Oh, nice.
For like the first couple months, that's where you're going to be able to buy it. And then after that, then everybody else is going to be able to sell it.
For sure.
Target, it just blows me away that D&D is available in Target.
Well, I've been seeing D&D-based t-shirts and other apparel all over the place. It's like it's become the new big geek thing. And I'll tell you where it started. I believe it was second season of Stranger Things on Netflix.
Well, they did
the
it.
The kids
they
were playing D&D.
They were playing D&D in the first season, too.
That got a lot of people going, oh, wow, that sounds fun. And that and Critical Role and a bunch of other things just kind of spiraling. And it's been over the last few years. I mean, Community did a show about role playing mm-hmm. once even. So it's just been the geeks, you and I, the people our age, finally got old enough to be in control of things. And we still love D&D. So with 3.5, and then, well, we can forget about 4th edition, but then 5th edition came out, and woohoo! Last five-ish years since 5th edition came out. I think it's coming up on its 5th anniversary in November, if I remember right.
I don't know.
September or November, regardless. This fall. That's a lot of time to get the ball rolling, you know?
Well, and a lot of things have been happening that help legitimize the game. You know, we've got like Stephen Colbert has come out and said, you know, I used to play D&D. I loved every minute of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's several other big name actors, actresses, directors.
Vin Diesel.
Well, not just Vin Diesel, but God, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's married to like Viera something or other, this really hot chick, and he was in the Magic Mike movies.
I don't know, I never watched
anyhow that. But he's like,
you're not meaning
huge
Channing Tatum, are you?
No,
that's the only one I know from Magic Mike, so.
I can't remember his name, but he plays a
stripper.
No, he's a paladin. He's a paladin of Tiamat. Oh, is his character.
Oh, that was awesome. He's not a stripper, he's a paladin.
Anyway.
Let me see your codpiece, baby. I'm sorry. Funny. Anyway, yeah, so that's very cool.
We've got all these big name stars, or at least fairly big name stars, who are just gushing about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there are a lot of them out there.
That only goes to help the whole hobby in general as well. You know, people will go, oh, well, I want to play that, you know, that D&D. Oh, hey, here's 5th edition. And then, you know, they've been playing for a little while and they go back to their game store and they're like, hey, what's this? This Vampire 5th edition? What's that? Oh, my God. And then they look into that, or they see the new Traveler that's coming out. Yeah, there's a new version of Traveler coming out. What's about that, eh? Hard science fiction for the win. Or they see one of the Star Wars games and go, hey, I like Star Wars. There's a Star Wars game, too? are on and on. Maybe they pick up Pugmire.
Well, and that's just it. There are so many different things you can play. There's a game system for everybody.
Yep.
You know, if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, they got you covered.
They literally have A Song of Ice and Fire, the role-playing game. I have it.
If you like Middle-earth, they've got several.
Yep, I have that.
If you like, you know, just your generic fantasy games, they have them. If you like sci-fi, they got you covered. If you like Star Wars or Star Trek, they got you covered.
Or horror, or various types of horror.
If you're a fan of H.P. Lovecraft, they definitely got you covered.
Yeah. One of the greatest role-playing games of ever, you know, of all time, but that's okay. Point is, we're in a great renaissance for tabletop role-playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, and it's really cool, because it used to be, we used to have to kind of struggle. We had our core group, which we had a fairly good amount of people, but it could be hard to get everyone lucky together. Now, I'm looking at potentially, when I run that first Pugmire game on the 14th for y'all, we're looking at upwards of 8 people playing. That's twice as many people playing as I wanted. But hey, I said I invited everybody from the old group who's may potentially be coming.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And we can always, you know, bring people in and out as we need to.
And I expect that. Actually, I'm sorry, I miscounted. 9. Potentially 9. I forgot Zircon's mom, although she probably can't make it.
Well,
you know, Rylea. Does anyone remember Rylea?
She said she would love to be a reoccurring character.
Right. But odds are she can't.
When make she it. Can. Yeah.
Our gaming time just doesn't work for her work time. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so next month, we're going to be doing another one of these deconstructing shows, and I don't know. Not sure what I want to talk about. Oh, maybe Vampire. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, we'll just stick with the whole World of Darkness theme. Now that y'all have a taste of what the system's about and how it goes, we'll go a little more in-depth, maybe. I'll break out some... Yeah. I've got, 3 different editions, and I'm like a decade behind on editions. I don't have the 4th edition... 20th anniversary, or whatever it was. I don't have the new 5th edition. I didn't do the alternate side one, because fuck that. I'm just Vampire the Masquerade. That's what I do. That whole side thing where they blew up the world and then they did this different thing. Yeah, fuck your retcon. There is only the Masquerade. That line. That world. That's what we do. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I didn't like the way they changed the rules. Whatever. Anyway, that's next month.
Yes.
And until next time, I'm Scormus.
And I'm Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
Wow, you got this far. I'm impressed. Also, if you decided to play the drinking game, please get yourself to a hospital right away. No human should ever drink that much alcohol. If you actually enjoyed this travesty of a podcast, please drop by our website at scoreme.com, which could inspire a drinking game of its own.